I would like to do an overview of the course that you're about to explore. But before I get into the particulars of Egyptian alchemy and how this course works with that knowledge, I'd like to do a quick kind of survey of different spiritual traditions, how they deal with the light body, how they conceive of it, and some information about how they work with it. So the first one I'll start with is the Christian tradition. And in that tradition, the light body is often referred to as the resurrection body, obviously referencing the resurrection of Jesus. As we move into the Middle East, there's a fascinating field of information dealing with the light body that comes out of Sufism. Sufism is the mystical sect of Islam. So its main focus is on love, divine love, and how to access that. And there are many methods for accessing this high vibrational state by working with different subtle aspects of what we call love. The practitioner who was most credited with bringing Sufism to the West was Hazrat Inayat Khan. And Hazrat Inayat Khan was a very advanced master with consummate abilities. And when he comes in etherically to present himself, he is preceded by the winged heart. And in fact, the winged heart is the symbol, one of the main symbols in Sufism. And from my interpretation, the winged heart means the heart, which is our feeling nature, has been elevated and is moving up into higher realms of consciousness, which is why it has wings. It's a very interesting field of knowledge about the light body. As we move to China, we start looking at Taoism, which is an ancient form of working with the light body through something called qi. So qi is an energy that's very similar to what the yogis call and yoginis call prana. In Taoism, it's called qi, and this is a very subtle energy having to do with life force and consciousness, awareness. And the methods of Taoism refine the qi that runs through our body, and it becomes so refined that then the body becomes transformed in certain ways, and what emerges is a light body. And in Taoism, that light body is often called the diamond body. And a practitioner who has attained the diamond body becomes an immortal. So the immortals are interesting from the Taoist perspective. There was a tendency for lifespan to be extended when qi was so purified in the body. But what became immortal was not the physical body, but the light body, which they called, as I said, the diamond body. Legends speak about cloud walkers, which is a term I find most interesting. Cloud walkers are those who have attained the diamond body and have become an immortal, and they are so refined they can walk on clouds or through space because their body, especially the light body, has become so refined, it can move through things like clouds and space without any hindrance. There's a tradition of mystery schools around the world, and many of them call the light body the solar body. And this is really interesting. The relationship between our light body, our physical body, and the sun is fascinating. So if you look at the radiation of light and energy coming from the sun, that is what creates life. Without this fire element radiated by the sun, life as we know it would not exist on Earth. But in addition to that, there is in your subtle energy body and your physical body, around the solar plexus, are two types of fire, which yogis call Jathara Agni and Bhuta Agni. Jathara Agni is the fire of digestion, because if you look at the biochemical processes of digestion, every time you eat something, the fire, Jathara Agni, ignites, so to speak, and creates a slow burn, a slow oxidation of the food you've eaten to extract the energy. Then in the solar plexus, the second fire is called the Bhuta Agni. This is etheric fire, and this is the key to creating the light body. The Bhuta Agni is an etheric fire, and there are methods for moving it through your body, through the nadis, the most subtle pathways of energy in the body, through the meridian systems, through the nerve pathways. So it's a very complex system that is highly effective, and the Hathors actually referenced the solar body and a message they gave about drawing energies from the sun that would be beneficial to your elevation. Rosicrucianism is a complex amalgam of many different traditions, and in Rosicrucianism, it is the light body is sometimes called the diamond body of the temple of God. And so in this concept, your body is the temple of God. The mystery of the divine is hidden within you in what is called your diamond body. So when the light body starts to emerge, that is called the diamond body of the temple of God, because that light comes out of your physicality. If we turn our attention to ancient India, there's a whole vast field of knowledge called Tantra. And in Tantrism and yoga, the term for the light body is sometimes Vajra body, sometimes the adamantine body, and sometimes the divine body. And Tantra is a method for working with the primordial power of what we might call sexual energy and transmuting it and elevating it to such an extent that your light body emerges. And that is the highest expression of Tantra. Also coming out of India, but a much earlier form of knowledge of coming from the ancient rishis was Vedanta. In Vedanta, they call it the superconductive body. And I think that refers to the fact that when your body has been elevated and purified and reached a certain vibrational state, and the light body starts to emerge, your body goes into a state of superconductivity, both your physical body and your light body. Also coming out of India is Kriya Yoga, which is an extraordinary system. It is a very simple meditation, set of meditation methods that rapidly accelerate consciousness and activates eventually the light body. In that system, it's called the body of bliss. And indeed, when you start working in this course and you start working with the higher exercises, you will experience bliss for yourself. And it's very cool, very cool. Kriya Yoga has a fascinating history. The yogi Babaji originally held this knowledge and transmitted it to mankind. And the first person that he, well, one of them, maybe not the first, but one of the main ones he communicated this to was Lahiri Mahasaya, who became a disciple of his. And Lahiri transferred this knowledge to Swami Yukteswar. And then he handed it to Paramahansa Yogananda, who brought it to the West. So Paramahansa Yogananda was a very significant figure in Kriya Yoga and a highly developed master. There are many miracles associated with him. And when he died, his body did not decompose. This happens sometimes with beings who have refined their consciousness so much that the body-mind complex is affected and the body does not decompose like a normal human being. Very interesting work and very worthwhile pursuing and exploring this if you're interested in that approach. In Gnosticism and Neoplatonism, the light body is called the radiant body. And Gnosticism is a system which basically says the mysteries of the cosmos are within you. And there are means of working with these energies so that you can elevate yourself. And when you elevate yourself enough, the light body starts to form and it becomes quite radiant, which is why it was called the radiant body. In Sri Aurobindo's way of working, he called it the divine body and said that it was composed of supramental substance. So Sri Aurobindo was a yogic master in India in modern times, and he had extraordinary abilities. He was able to reach such a state of stillness in himself that when a cyclone or typhoon hit that area of India, he went into meditation and the wind did not touch that particular area where he was located. So he has some very interesting and profound insights, and that's Sri Aurobindo. Now, let's talk about two fascinating areas that are not culturally connected. There was no physical connection between these two systems, as far as we know. But there are some similarities, and there are some profound differences as well. But I want to hone in on some of the similarities. This first reference would be Tibetan Buddhism. And in Tibetan Buddhism, your light body is called the rainbow light body. The rainbow light body. And what occurs in the moment of death of a high practitioner, which is usually a Dogchen practitioner or a Vajrayana practitioner, the physical body begins to die, but it turns into light. This is really fascinating, the relationship between the physical body and light. In fact, Albert Einstein once said that our bodies are trapped light. So in the rainbow body state, the physical body dissolves back into the elements, as with somebody who might die, and a person looking at that practitioner going into this metamorphosis would see that their physical body, his or her physical body, would get smaller and smaller and smaller. But the light coming out of the body would get stronger and stronger and stronger. And then when the transition is complete, the body completely disappears into light. It has been transformed into pure light. And there are only two things that remain: fingernails and hair, which is really interesting and strange to me, but that is what happens in the rainbow light body phenomenon. The hair and fingernails are collected by the disciples of the practitioner because it has the energy of his consciousness, and they're placed in stupas because the relics have power. And you can just, if you're receptive, you can stand there and receive the energy very clearly. So let me jump tracks for a moment and talk about something from the Catholic tradition that's similar. My wife Judy and I went to Italy, and we went to the gravesite of St. Francis of Assisi. And St. Francis of Assisi attained the light body in many, many forms. And what's so fascinating is that his crypt is underneath the basilica in his name. And there are stairs that will go down into his crypt, but in the main altar, if you go to the main, when you go into the basilica, if you take a left-hand turn, go to the main altar, you'll see markings on the floor, and they are directly above the crypt. So Gina and I stood there, and it was like the energy was so intense, and it was beautiful, but very intense, and I felt like I heard the sound of like wind going through birch trees. And the energy was so intense that it affected my physical body. And when we got back to the hotel, I looked in the mirror, and I looked like I had sunburn. And that was a direct result of the energies from the bones of St. Francis still emanating energies, blessings to those who were open. So that, I find that very interesting. I just wanted to mention that as a sidebar, because these systems interconnect in fascinating ways. But let us return to Tibetan Buddhism. So in that moment of attaining the rainbow light body, so many things change for the practitioner. He or she is absorbed into his or her own light, and they become an immortal. There is, in Tibetan Buddhism, a method for going through the death process consciously, and it's called POWA, P-H-O-W-A. POWA is a method for connecting to a point above your head. And this point, if you were to sit with your arms straight above your head, touching fingers, that point is the entry point for what is called the Pure Land of Amitabha. Amitabha is the Buddha of infinite light, L-I-G-H-T. And the Pure Lands of Amitabha are a vibrational field that you can enter into as a practitioner. And in that vibrational field, there are no obstacles to enlightenment. You can turn your entire attention to the goal of becoming fully illuminated and enlightened. There are no obstacles. It's a fascinating realm. And then related to Amitabha is Amitayus, the Buddha of infinite life, L-I-F-E. So Amitabha is the Buddha of light, infinite light, and Amitayus is the Buddha of infinite life. So there is a direct relationship encoded in this symbology where light and life are intimately connected. I'll say that again. Life and light are intimately connected. And how we work with the light, the luminosity in our own nature, depends on what level of expression comes forward from us. But it's very, very interesting, this light and life relationship. And the entry point, as I said, for the POA practice is this point above your head where you enter into, through a portal, into the realm of Amitabha. There was a correspondence in Egyptian alchemy, which I find really interesting, because there was no physical contact that we know of between these civilizations. So, in the Egyptian alchemical system, there are three aspects, and then a fourth that is outside of time and space altogether. So your physical body is called the Khat, K-H-A-T. And this what we'll be exploring in this work is the bridge from the Khat to your energy body called the Ka. It's sometimes called the etheric double, the spiritual twin, because it looks like your physical body, but it is not the physical body. It is made of energy. So it has the same, it looks the same energetically. And in fact, if a practitioner of the Egyptian system, and this happened in the yogas of ancient India, where a practitioner or a yogi could refine awareness so much that their ka could travel and bilocate. So they could be in two places at once. And someone who physically saw the ka would think it was the person because it looks exactly the same, but it is not. It is made of energy. And so this was a very significant thing that emerged both out of the yogas of ancient India and also out of Egypt. And then there is a fourth point, a fourth portal that is outside of time and space altogether, and that is called the Ba, the celestial soul. And the celestial soul is crucial to the Egyptian system of alchemy. And we'll get into that. You'll explore this for yourself during the course in very intimate ways. But let me just kind of do a brushstroke around it. The celestial soul continually emanates love and divine energies that are uplifting to life and consciousness. There are methods for connecting to the celestial soul. And what I find interesting and why I brought Tibetan Buddhism and Egyptian alchemy together in this conversation is that the point above your head where you were to enter into the Pure Lands of Amitabha is the same point where you're connecting with your celestial soul. So the celestial soul opens a portal at that same location. And when you interact with the Ba in a certain way, it will send energies down which you will feel. It's palpable. It's not a head trip. It is a solid energetic flow that you will feel. So it's very interesting, just from the standpoint of the architecture of our subtle bodies, that this same point was used by the Tibetans to get into the Pure Land of Amitabha and the Egyptian alchemists for communing with their celestial soul, which would allow them to increase the vibrational field of their body and then cause the light body to emerge, which they called the Sahu. So the journey of the Ka, which is what this course is called, is the journey from a biological being, solely biological being, to enhanced biological beings through an increase of vibration, and then the emergence of the light body, which is the greatest potential for a human being in this system. And then the person is able to travel into other realms and becomes immortal as well. There is a point I need to make here when we get into the discussion of Egyptian alchemy and the powers that it might bring to you. And some of you doing this course may have the sense that you were a practitioner in Egypt in, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago, and you may have impressions from those lifetimes. What I would like to say in this juncture is that there is a critical element in this way of working with Egyptian high alchemy. And I call it high alchemy because its goal is to increase the vibrational fields of our body and the vibrational fields of our light, and allow the light, the sahu, to emerge with full radiance. And that's the goal. There were practitioners in ancient Egypt, and there's still some today doing this stuff, where they would amplify the ka, but not introduce the higher aspects of the celestial soul. So the ka was, there are ways to increase energy of your ka without referencing higher vibrational energies. You can just increase the energy of your ka, and you'll be more effective at getting what you want. But what occurred in ancient Egypt were that some of the practitioners developed their ka to be very strong, but they practiced black magic. And so they would get what they wanted at other people's expense. And that's why I think it's very important when you enter into this particular domain that you have an ethical system in place. This is not morality. Morality, in my way of looking at it, is something imposed by religion or an authority figure. Ethics are a deeper vibrational state, and it has to do with the recognition that all life is connected. All life is interconnected. And someone in that state of recognition will be careful about how they act in the world, because they know that it creates ripples throughout the physical and the etheric and astral realities. So I advise you to put in place the knowledge that you are connected to other beings. You are connected to all life. And that sense of interconnectedness will guide you and give you ethical restraint so that you don't rush in and create havoc because you want something and you're going to make it happen. We're seeing right now in the world a tremendous outpicturing of those who are using their power to create what they want with little regard for others. It's a very dangerous place. So if you're cultivating these subtle energies to elevate yourself, I strongly advise that you have some ethical constraint put in there. So as you start working in the world, there will be positive benefit instead of negative consequences. So that's these. There are other spiritual systems that address the rainbow light body. I'm not familiar with some of them. I know that in South America, there's something called the Rainbow Light Bridge. So that's surely connected to this field of knowledge. Now, before we jump into explaining more of the Egyptian system, I would like to reference a modern science relatively recently developed called biophotonics, which is the study of light that is emanated from the cells of our bodies. What happened was instrumentation became subtle enough, sensitive enough, to actually measure and quantify emanations of light coming from biological cells. And so every cell in your body emanates light. And this has been scientifically documented, measured, and quantified, which is the signature of science. So it's not speculation, it's data. And what the data is revealing is that every human being has cells, and these cells emit light. Very interesting. And so the cultivation of light in the body increases the emanation of light from the physical body, but also begins to energize the light body. So coming with this, the course are some handouts. There's a PDF of resources about biophotonics. If you are interested in this, this will give you some layperson-friendly information, and it's a fascinating field. The main point I want to make around biophotonics is you are already a light being. You don't have to do anything. No practices, no meditation, nada. Because you are already an hybrid. You are a human being, flesh and blood body, and in every cell of your body, light is being emanated. And what the traditions say and work with is if you increase that light, you'll elevate yourself and you will become illuminated and you will begin to enter a whole different experience of life that is beautiful, beneficial, and blissful. So let's go back over the basic way the Egyptians viewed this these different parts of our being. Your physical body, the cot, obeys the laws of Newtonian physics because it has matter, it has mass, it is affected by gravity. So in the Newtonian world, when you, for instance, throw a stone in a certain direction, if you know the velocity and the direction, you can predict where it's going to hit. But when you go deeper into matter and there is less gravity, then you have a whole different phenomenon because you cannot predict in the quantum realm, because this is what this is called, you cannot predict where that would wind up. If you took a subatomic particle and you could throw it somewhere, you could not predict where it would land. You could talk about the probabilities, but you wouldn't have certainty. So the quantum realm is full of uncertainty. It's the nature of the quantum realm, and that is the foundation for our physicality, although we're not aware of it. Now, if you start going through these different methods, these spiritual traditions I talked about, you will begin to understand and see that directly. So in Egyptian alchemy, that will happen for you as well, because your awareness will get more and more refined. Then we, of course, have the Ka, and the Ka is an energy body, has no mass, therefore it is not subjected to the force of gravity, and therefore, by definition, it is in the quantum realm, and all types of possibilities exist in the quantum realm that are not so easy to attain in the Newtonian world. This is a very important point. The hinge point for moving up into higher consciousness and the luminous light body is through your Ka, through your energy body, and infusing it with energies and connecting it to higher points. When you connect to the Ba, which we talked about a little bit a while ago, above your head, if you put your hands together and touch your fingers together, that's where the Ba entry point is. And when you form a relationship to your own Ba, those energies, benevolent energies, healing energies, will descend, enter your Ka body. It will also enter your physical body because the Ka body transmutes subtle energies into physical energy as well. So it has a benefit physically as well. But it's certainly in terms of attaining a light body, it is crucial, and that is the fundamental fulcrum from which this is built. Another word we could use for that is the power of love, because the Ba emanates what we might call divine love. And when you form a connection to your celestial soul and you send it the right emotional energy, it will respond and send back to you a flow of energies that are palpable, visceral, not intellectual, not imaginary. You'll feel it. And that descent of the energy from the Ba is what enlivens the Ka, increases its luminosity to such an extent that it becomes the Sahu, the immortal radiant body, sometimes called the golden raiment. So these are the fundamental ways of looking at this as we get ready to go into the course. There is a central important point in relating to your celestial soul. The only emotion that it, or plural, the only emotions it will respond to are those that are benevolent, like love, appreciation, gratitude. It will respond to that and send you a blessing down into your Ka body and into your Ka. And that is the fulcrum point from which this work takes place. So some of us have had such impoverished life, maybe too much trauma. And so we look at this body of work and we say, well, there's nothing I can feel appreciation or gratitude for, just nada. There's no reason. I don't have a reason to feel appreciation or gratitude. Well, the beauty of spiritual mastery is that you don't need to. Spiritual mastery is about creating an emotional state at will. And so for those of us who may have had a difficult life and we don't feel love or gratitude, there's another handout that's come with the course called The Primer. And this explains essentially how to create the vibrational authenticity of love or gratitude, appreciation, even if you don't have any of that in your history, your personal history. So that's a very important point. So if you're someone who can think about appreciation or gratitude and you're there, you got it. For those of you who don't know how to do this, then I would suggest you read The Primer, and because that is an important piece in this whole thing, is how to generate love, appreciation, gratitude at will, because you're going to be sending that up to your celestial soul, and the celestial soul will begin to respond to you. So that's the course in a nutshell. And you'll be taken through different experiences, different methods for working with the light body, and you'll have a direct way of working with your own Ba, your own celestial soul. And I look forward to hearing your observations if you feel like sharing them, because this is a journey that is extraordinary. And I look forward to hearing from you if you feel so inclined. So that's it. We'll move into the course.